Welcome to the Federal Society's Practice Group podcast. The following podcast, hosted by the Federal Society's Labor and Employment Law Practice Group, was recorded on Tuesday, May 22, 2018, during a live Courthouse Steps telephone conference call held exclusively for Federalist Society members.
Welcome to the Federalist Society's telephone conference call. In this telephone, we will discuss Frank v. Gauss, a case that was recently granted cert in the Supreme Court. My name is Laura Flint, and I'm the Deputy Director of Practice Groups here at the Federalist Society. As always, please note that all expressions of opinion are those of the expert on today's call. Today, we are happy to have with us Theodore H. Frank, Director of Litigation at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. After hearing from our speaker, we'll go to audience question and answer. Thank you for speaking with us, Ted. The floor is yours.
Hi. Thanks for having me, and thanks for the opportunity to talk about CPRE, which I've done on many a Federalist Society teleforum. The underlying case where the Supreme Court has granted cert involves a class action against Google and the settlement thereof, where the class gets $0, the attorneys get over $2 million, and the remainder of an $8 million settlement fund, $8.5 million settlement fund, goes to a variety of charities that are affiliated with both Google and the plaintiff's attorneys. The underlying allegations were a privacy class action claiming that 119 million or so Google users had their privacy violated by the way that Google transmitted information about search inquiries to people who clicked links or to the websites where links were clicked. And that a variety of state and federal privacy laws were violated regarding those practices because it was hypothetically possible to track back who was doing the searches and information about those people. The case settled. Again, though billions of dollars of damages were claimed, the case settled for an $8.5 million fund, but zero of that was going to go to the class. Because it's a class action settlement, class members may object to attorneys using the class action settlement process to benefit themselves at the expense of class members or using the class action system to create settlements where the only benefit goes to the attorneys. And Melissa Holyoke and I, both of CEI, objected to this settlement. We protested that there was no benefit to the class, and therefore it was inappropriate to treat it as a class action. There is no superiority. But the CPRE was also inappropriate because it would have been possible to distribute money to the class rather than to these charities, and the charities indicated conflicts of interest because several of them were charities that Google was regularly giving money to, and therefore all that was really happening was a change in accounting entries, and it was illusory relief. And two of the charities were the alma maters of class counsel and seemed to have been picked in order for class counsel to sort of double dip in the settlement, getting a benefit by being able to have a ceremony at their alma mater where they deliver a large check and then get attorney's fees on top of that. The district court at the fairness hearing said this doesn't pass the smell test, but nevertheless approved the settlement and approved the fee request. With respect to the alma mater issue, the court said, one of the attorneys is giving money to Harvard, but not all of the attorneys went to Harvard, so therefore it's okay. That seems to me to be an incorrect analysis of a conflict of interest issue. After all, if one of the attorneys gave money to a charity his wife ran, nobody would say that's okay because not all of the attorneys are married to the same woman, and therefore there was a check. There could be mutual back scratching, as appeared to have happened here. With respect to the argument that money should go to the class rather than to see prey, the court said that it was not feasible to give money to the class because there were 119 million class members, and distributing $6 million to 119 million class members would mean that each class member would only get a few pennies each. We think that's also the wrong way to analyze that sort of question, because in no class action does money go to every single class member. Nearly every single class action is settled with a claims process, and under that claims process, usually only a fraction of the class ever makes money. So, for example, there is a large class in a Facebook settlement, Fraley versus Facebook, where the court insisted that there be a claims process and money go to the class rather than there be a $0 settlement. And sure enough, so few members of the Facebook class, even though there were over 100 million class members, made claims that they were able to distribute a $15 million fund, even though, again, that would only be pennies per class member. And in fact, they still had money left over for CPRAE, because they capped the claims at $15 each in that case. And there are just a variety of other cases where these sorts of things happen, where, in fact, in the median class action, less than a quarter of the percent of the class makes a claim. If you're to say that a class action has to distribute money to every single class member, or it doesn't have to distribute money to any class members, once you make that judgment, then nearly every class action will move to all CPRAE with zero for the class. We appealed to the Ninth Circuit, and the Ninth Circuit affirmed on basically the same grounds that the district court did in a 2-1 decision. It held that the conflict of interest regarding the attorney's alma maters was not sufficient, that Google was entitled to give money to organizations it was affiliated with as part of a compromise settlement, and that, again, to determine that it was appropriate to have CPRAE when it was not feasible to give money to every single class member. We argued that cash to the class should not be treated as equivalent to CPRAE, the indirect benefit, and that attorneys had a fiduciary duty to put the class members first. The court disagreed and said that attorneys have no obligation to favor a cash distribution over a CPRAE distribution. This contradicts what the Third Circuit, Seventh Circuit, and Eighth Circuit said. So we took this to the Supreme Court, pointing out the circuit split and pointing out that an earlier cert petition that had been denied by the Supreme Court in Merrick v. Lane resulted in a statement respecting denial of certiorari by Chief Justice Roberts, indicating that CPRAE was a potential problem that the court would be interested in taking up. And sure enough, on April 30th, the court has granted certiorari. It will be scheduled for argument sometime in the October term. And we don't have the date of the actual oral argument yet, but opening briefs are due July 9th, with amicus briefs due July 16th. We had some very interesting amicus support pointing out the First Amendment problems of CPRAE, where class members are being forced to support causes that they may not agree with, and that opting out would not protect their rights. The Article 3 problems of CPRAE, the property rights problems of CPRAE, and 16 state attorneys general in a bipartisan coalition also protested the idea of money going to CPRAE rather than class members, and arguing that other circuits have gotten it right. This is an important case because, as I mentioned, if the Ninth Circuit standard of distributability prevails, whereby if it's not possible to give money to every single class member, attorneys may choose to give money to CPRAE instead of to the class with no penalty to their fee request or settlement approval, we will see potentially billions of dollars going from class members to attorneys' favorite charities as sort of a slush fund. To take a recent example, the Anthem data breach class action with over 60 million class members settled for $115 million. But if once you take away the cost of administering the settlement and the requested attorney's fees, it works out to less than a dollar per class member. And you could have said that that was completely non-distributable and there was no obligation to give any compensation to the class, and instead all the money will go to the attorney's favorite charities. Indeed, the conflict of interest provisions are now so light in terms of Ninth Circuit scrutiny that you can have all sorts of conflicts of interest in terms of the attorneys giving money to their favorite charities or charities relatively related to them, so long as they don't have a current financial interest in the charity. And certainly defendants can create the illusion of relief by giving money to charities where they are already giving money and therefore make a settlement seem much larger than it is, so that the attorneys actually get the lion's share of the settlement value, because there's actually no change in the defendant's practice when they're giving money to a charity that they were already giving to, but the attorneys can take credit for it and then get a large attorney fee. Another potential problem with CPRE, though it didn't occur in this case, parties may try to curry favor of the judge by using CPRE to move money to the judge's favorite charities in another Google settlement that we did not challenge a few years back. The judge who had a teaching appointment at Santa Clara School of Law moved $500,000 of the CPRE money from other charities to Santa Clara University as a condition of approval of the settlement. You can see the potential problems with situations like that. I think it's also very important that class counsel have a fiduciary duty to their class, that they put the class members first, that they prioritize class members' relief. As the Third Circuit said in Baby Products Antitrust Litigation, class members are not indifferent between cash and money given to a third party, and class counsel should not be either. The fact is that class counsel isn't indifferent. The class counsel would prefer to give money to their favorite charity than to give money to class members. If faced between the choice of having a ceremony where they're handing over $1 million oversized check to their favorite charity and getting honored and getting their picture in the newspaper, and issuing $200,005 checks to a bunch of anonymous class members who probably won't even send a thank you card, it's going to be very hard for an attorney to not want to prefer to give the money to CPRE rather than to their clients. And indeed, you can go on Google and do an image search for CPRE and oversized check and see lots of ceremonies where this has actually happened. This is a fascinating case. We were very excited that the Supreme Court has taken it to resolve the conflict among the circuits. I got into this issue when I wrote an essay for the Federalist Society back in 2007, and here we are 11 years later and looking at a possible dramatic reform of the law, very excited to see that happen. I look forward to your questions.
Let's go to audience questions. In a moment, you'll hear a prompt indicating that the floor mode has been turned on. After that, to request the floor, enter star, then the pound key. When we get to your request, you will hear a prompt, and then you may ask your question. We will answer questions in the order in which they are received. Again, to ask a question, please enter star, then the pound key on your telephone keypad. While we wait for our first audience question, I'll ask one of my own. How do you think this case will be decided in the Supreme Court?
Well, I'm right, so I expect to win 9-0. At least that's what we hope. I don't see this as a partisan issue. I see it as just a good government, just a civil justice. This is the way the system is supposed to work. Attorneys are supposed to put their clients first. And the class action system shouldn't be abused like this. CPRE is a bit of a misnomer here. The doctrine originated in the trust context. You would have a trust that had a charitable purpose. The charitable purpose would be frustrated or resolved or realized in some way, and the trust could no longer use its money for that charitable purpose. What do you do with it? There's the doctrine called CPRE, which comes from the old French for CPRE comme possible, as near as possible. You reformulate the trust for a new cause to recognize that you can no longer do it. So in the 19th century, somebody has a trust that was for the abolition of slavery. Slavery is abolished. What do you use the money for? The trust was reformulated for the education of former slaves. Similarly, the March of Dimes used to be for curing polio. Polio is cured. It now deals with birth defects, and it's been sort of a distortion of that doctrine to transport it into the class action system and turn it into something where instead of giving money to class members, you're giving it to the lawyers' favorite charities.
Again, to ask a question, please enter star, then the pound key on your telephone keypad. While we wait for a question, I'll make a brief announcement. Our next Teleform conference call is scheduled for tomorrow, Thursday, May 24th. That call will be on the book Speak Freely, Why Universities Must Defend Free Speech, and will feature Professor Frederick Schauer of UVA, Professor Keith E. Whittington of Princeton, and our moderator, Anthony Deardruff of the Faculty Division of the Federalist Society. Again, to ask a question, please enter star, then the pound key on your telephone keypad. Not seeing any. Has there been any recent Supreme Court cases on this issue?
There have not. This is the first Supreme Court case in over a decade on class action settlements at all, and this is the first one to address the CPRE issue at all. I will say, as long as we have people on the phone who are interested in the topic, that we're still looking for pro bono help. There are a number of organizations that have expressed interest in writing amicus briefs, but are looking for pro bono support, and we'd be happy to help match you with organizations if you're interested in this topic and would like to write upon it, or if you just have questions in general, or you're a class member in another case where there's a CPRE issue, we're happy to take on those sorts of pro bono representations.
I'll make a final call for questions. Again, to ask a question, please enter star, then the pound key on your telephone keypad. Not seeing any questions, do you have any final remarks?
Thank you for your time, and happy to talk to people about this issue.
On behalf of the Federalist Society, I want to thank Ted for the benefit of his valuable time and expertise today. We welcome listener feedback by email at info@fedsoc.org. Thank you all for joining us. We are adjourned.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this practice group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at fedsoc.org/multimedia.